This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning into Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we'll hear from Richard Mabian, who will interview students from Wyandotte and Harmon High Schools who are involved in citizen science water testing in Kansas City, Kansas. Then Richard will give us an update on the Clean Power Plan listening session that was held at MARC last week. But first, I'm As I Evolve with your headline news. Econews.com reports that Norway's $1 trillion sovereign wealth fund, the world's largest, has announced it will generally shun investments in energy sources such as coal that are unlikely to be needed in a future low-carbon society. In 2016, the Norwegian Parliament mandated the fund, which invests Norway's revenues from oil and gas production in stocks, bonds, and real estate abroad, to sell out of firms that derive more than 30% of the activities or revenues from coal. This divestment from coal means that the fund does not generally invest in an energy source that will probably not survive the transition to a low-carbon society, the fund said in a letter to the Norwegian Ministry of Finance dated February 21st. The fund proposed in November that it should remove oil and gas stocks from its equity benchmark index, which would mean cutting investments in those companies over time. At that time, the news sent the value of oil and gas worldwide lower. The proposal is under review at the Finance Ministry and will be voted on by the Norwegian Parliament at a later stage. BBC.com reports that the Arctic stronghold of the world's seeds reaches 1 million mark. The vault storing the world's most precious seeds is taking delivery on Monday of consignments that will take it to the 1 million mark. More than 70,000 crops will be added to frozen storage chambers buried deep within a mountain in the Arctic Circle. Cereal staples, unusual crops like the Estonian onion potato, and barley used to brew Irish beer are among them. Monday marks the 10th anniversary of the Global Seed Vault. The number of deposits amounts to 1,059,646. This number excludes emergency withdrawals of about 90,000 seeds needed to make up for precious samples stranded in Syria due to the conflict there. The reinforced vault is designed to hold backups of samples stored elsewhere in seed banks around the world. Econews.com reports that electric buses will take over half the world fleet by 2025. Nearly half of the municipal buses on the road worldwide will be electric within 7 years, with China expected to dominate the global market as it aims to cut urban pollution and support domestic manufacturers. According to a report from Bloomberg News Energy Finance, BNEF, the total number of electric buses in service is forecast to more than triple from last year's 386,000 to about 1.2 million in 2025, equal to about 47% of the worldwide city bus fleet. Bloomberg News Agency reports that by 2025, China will account for 99% of the world's battery-powered buses. Electric buses remain more expensive up front than those fueled by diesel or compressed natural gas, but BNEF found that battery-powered buses could already offer a lower total cost of ownership when fuel and maintenance expenses are considered. Public buses are a key part of the urban transit infrastructure, and the fact that they serve routine fixed routes makes them ideal for electrification. Finally, fishing continued after the East China Sea oil spill. Fishing continued at the site of a massive oil spill in the East China Sea for days after the incident. Most of the fishing vessels in the affected region were identified as Chinese. There have been major concerns over possible contamination in seafood and marine life in and around the region. The spill occurred after an oil tanker collided with another cargo ship on the 6th of January before sinking days later. It was transporting 136,000 tons, or almost 1 million barrels, of ultralight crude oil to South Korea. It is feared to be highly toxic and is invisible, unlike the shimmering slick on the sea surface seen after crude oil leaks. Experts say it is the first time a petroleum product of this type has spilled in such large quantity. Independent experts say fishing was not stopped until much later, and reports in the Chinese media indicate the same. China is a major seafood exporter, and the impact region is known to be rich in fisheries, including species like crab, squid, yellow croaker, mackerel, among others.
All right. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard Mabian, and our opening monologue said, I'll be hosting the show tonight. And this is one of my favorite shows of the year because I'm in here with some future scientists. Future scientists. You heard them say they're coming in here from Harmon and Wyandotte High School. So now I will get with that in a second. But first, we thought we'd stop and give you a little update on how it went last week with the easy listening sessions, with the listening sessions that EPA allowed to be here in Kansas City. We had folks to come in from all over the place. I mean, it was bus loads that came in from Arkansas, St. Louis, and Omaha, and different places like that in the Midwest. And it was actually in two sessions. One was with the young ladies who I had on the show last week. I came in and talked to who were here representing Van Jones, one of Van Jones's organization. And then the second part of it was out at USDA. And it was where everyone went in to give their vocal comments to be heard and recorded. Expressing how they felt about the plan to abandon the Clean Power Plan. I have Mr. Bennett here with me, who is the science teacher at Harmon High School, and he participated in that event last week, so we thought we'd put him on Front Street and let him be the one to share with y'all what it was he experienced. So Mr. Bennett, if you would.
Yeah, so the EPA was well-staffed. There were, I don't know how many people were there from the EPA to just usher people into the many rooms that they had separated out to, but then they would have people documenting what you were saying once you got there. And so I was really, really just my main impression was I was struck by how many people of great intelligence and from different walks of life and different careers and fields were there to voice their opinions and voice their passion about defending our air and keeping our water clean and our land clean. And basically this Clean Power Plan was a positive move. You know, there could have been a better power plan, but this was very important, and to revoke it is insanity. And that's really what a lot of people were saying. There were people who were from nursing organizations and other medical fields. There were parent groups. There's a mother's group that was widely represented. I was there to represent the students of Wyandotte County and the teachers of Wyandotte County, and my main statement was about how I've been using this Clean Power Plan as a kind of a learning tool and saying our government is making steps in the right direction. We are doing some things to move towards cleaner power, cleaner energy. You know, natural gas is something that we've moved to in KCK, and that's been a big inspiration for my students when I tell them that's something that's been done just in the past few years. In Wyandotte County, of all places, that's a big deal.
That's a big one.
And the fact that we would then tell other communities in the country from now on, forget it, don't worry about doing that, just continue to burn the rest of the coal that's left in the ground and just, you know, burn some more oil and, you know, take the oil out of the tar sands and whatever you need to do, just do it to make a buck for a few people out there. That's a real shame. And so, anyway, that was my main gist, but so many articulate people who had so much to say to inspire, hopefully inspire some action on behalf of the EPA. I like to be optimistic, yeah. So I'm hoping that they will feel compelled to do the right thing and keep the Clean Power Plan and even enforce it and make it stronger, more robust.
Very good. You did very good with that. I want to also make sure we thank the Missouri Sierra Club and the Kansas Sierra Club, because they really put forth an effort to make this happen. Also, John Kerman, him and his organizations.
350.org.
And 350.org. And anytime you have that coming out of your local areas, you got to feel good about it. So thanks, everybody, for taking part in it and participating. I will say the Kansas City was well represented.
And one more thing I'd like to add is that I got some screenshots of the list of people who were there, because there were, I don't know, over 100 people, I believe, that spoke. And I wanted to capture who those people were so they would be great people to make connections with to continue to organize for this. I think that list is still available online. If you were to just go to EPA listening session Clean Power Plan, just Google that, And there's a PDF of the list of people who spoke and their organizations. And that really is kind of the list of who cares.
Right.
And there's a lot of people who care and who are working towards benefiting our environment. So.
All righty. All right, gang. Now it's time for why we are here tonight. And we had to figure out the perfect way to be able to introduce the young people. And we thought first thing we would do is provide them with a means. Everybody's got a question. Everybody's got a question, and they're going to come to the mic. They're going to introduce themselves, tell you which school they're from. They're going to ask their question and then answer it. All right, we're starting with.
My name is Randall Johnson, and I'm in ninth grade, and I go to Wyandotte. And my question is, what should people do to prevent damage to the local waterways? What people should do is things like not use water as trash, like toilets. And if people have pets, you know, like dogs or things like that, and if they're, like, you know, using the restroom, like their waste, pick it up. Because if they use the restroom on flat ground, then, you know, it could go into things like storm drains and water supplies.
Okay.
My name is James Cook, and I'm from J.C. Harmon High School. And my question is, why are you invested in the environment, or interested in the environment? I'm interested in the environment because, I really like to learn about all the exotic life living on Earth, like lions, tigers, and bears, and all the different kinds of plants. And because everybody lives on Earth, including myself, and I know that we need to take good care of it.
Okay.
All right. My name is Paul Hilton. I am a freshman at Wyandotte High School. And my question is, what are the worst things people can do to our local waterways? And my response to that is that people like to just throw a lot of junk in the water. They just throw it out. I've seen it happen before. They don't care. They literally can't wait until they just actually find a trash can and put it in there. So, like, they throw things away, like chips, candy wrappers, like everyday stuff that you would throw away, like just beverages, soda cans. And another way that people like ruin the waterways is with oil change. And sometimes the oil change can get into the streams and go into the river, and that messes it up.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Catherine Molina. I'm a ninth grader in Wyandotte High School. And my question is, what water bodies are important in KC? And for this answer, the water bodies that are really important in KC are the Kansas River and the Missouri River. They're really important because that's where we mostly get our water that we use in our daily basis. For example, we can use them like to drink, to cook our food, to do cleaning and stuff like that. But it also, it's helpful for the animals so that they can survive. For example, there could be like a lot of geese that might want to drink some water and stuff like that. And also the fish, that's basically the most important source for them because that's where they live.
Okay. Hello, my name is Brian Charlotte. I'm from J.C. Harmon High School. I'm in ninth grade. And my question is, what are some specific causes related to the harm of my test that I would do? My test that I would do is macroinvertebrates, which are little animals that live in the water. Some things that would hurt them would be phosphates, nitrates, bacteria, and overall general pollution because, it all could kill them. Like, some of them are very tolerant of pollution, and that's bad. Semi-tolerant is, like, in between tolerant and, like, super sensitive to it. And we would want super sensitive animals in the water because that would mean the water is good and clean. If it wasn't, then you wouldn't be able to go swimming or do anything else with it, really.
Okay.
My name is Brenton Ruano, and my question is, how can we inspire more people like you to be advocates of the environment? I think we could inspire more people to help with the environment by telling them or letting them see how us humans are hurting our own world by affecting and polluting our own water, which all living things need to be alive. Otherwise, we might all die and might get affected by the pollution we do.
Okay. Hello, my name is Jared Cup from Harmon High School. My question is, how can classes like this affect the people in your community? My personal opinion on the classes, the internship we're taking right now is that we're learning more and more about what affects our environment and how to check if we can keep a stable environment, how to help our environment.
First of all, I want those of us in here that are adults to give everybody a hand. I think they did an outstanding job. I mean, they took this on, they introduced you, you know who they are. I'm gonna bring up our main teacher who's here with us, Denise. Would you come up, please? Because I want you to explain the session that these young men, a young lady, are getting ready to explain. So each time a pair comes up, I want you to kind of explain what that testing station is, then I want them to explain what they're going to be doing. Okay.
My name's Denise Kidder, and I'm the educational specialist for Friends of the Kaw. And our mission as our nonprofit is to protect and preserve the Kansas River. And through this program, we are educating our youth for the future. So they're involved with this internship program, and this is one of their duties to fulfill their internship requirements, is to learn about all different types of tests that we would conduct on our water bodies to test for pollutants.
Okay, what particular test do they have? Is there a name for your test?
Yeah, we are doing dissolved oxygen.
I have another test. It is chloroform bacteria, right?
Fecal coliform bacteria.
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay, explain what that is. Got people out there that don't know, so you got to do it in such a way that they're going to know, that they need to know what it is that you're saying.
All right, so with dissolved oxygen, it's important because we can't see oxygen, and we have to test the oxygen in the water to see if, like, fish, creatures, and plant life could live in there.
Okay. To add on to dissolved oxygen, if there's too little, there's too little oxygen, that could affect the plants and animals. But if there's too much oxygen, that could also hurt plants and animals. There has to be a perfect amount. For chloroform, fecal coliform bacteria, you have to. It is a test to show how many bacterias are per square inch, right? Square inch?
Okay.
Oh, centimeter.
All right. We're getting ready to take a break. We'll be back with you in just a second. Okay, now.
In the year 2000, the Kansas City Star employed 10 full-time critics, two of whom were dedicated to the coverage of the arts. In 2018, the Star is down to one full-time critic and many performing arts events go uncovered. This week on All Souls Forum, Paul Horsley, former arts critic for the Star, will explain why professional arts criticism is necessary and important to keep the arts relevant and how it helps foster new talent and monitor the accountability of nonprofit groups. Join us on Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Hi, I'm Barry Lee, host of Signal to Noise here on KKFI, and you're invited to a special listening party at Vinyl Renaissance, 7932 Santa Fe Drive in Overland Park, Kansas, on Sunday, March 4th at 1 p.m. We will discuss and listen to Buffalo Springfield's final album, Last Time Around, on high-end stereo equipment. This event is a benefit for KKFI.
I am a child. I last a while.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Every winter, snow-white whooping cranes wade in the shallow waters and tall marsh grasses of the Aransas National Wildlife Refuge. This area on the Texas Gulf Coast is critical habitat for these tall, regal birds, which were on the brink of extinction just a few decades ago. Today, there are 600 whooping cranes in the wild, and most of them winter here. But Richard Belfus, president of the International Crane Foundation, says changes to this coastal habitat pose new dangers for the birds.
They have two very serious threats related to climate change on their wintering ground.
For one thing, drought threatens the supply of fresh water for these marshes, where salt and fresh water mix. If the water gets too salty, it cannot support the crabs and mussels that the cranes depend on for food. And the even bigger threat comes from sea level rise.
We will lose a lot to most of the current whooping crane habitat along the coast over time, with most climate change sea level rise forecasts.
Belfus says the birds might be able to shift to new diets or move farther inland, but
we don't know ultimately if they're going to be able to adapt if those habitat conditions are lost.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, this is Richard Mabian again, and we're here with a group of fantastic young people out of Wyandotte and Harmon High School. And we're talking about, I hadn't said yet, but they're going to be putting on their show next week at a NAACP meeting in Kansas City, Kansas. We'll have the different stations set up, and they'll have a chance to actually teach the NAACP members and other guests who we've invited, because there's some other guests that's been invited from various environmental programs around the city. They have a chance to show them exactly what it is that they've been learning. And that's what we're sitting here with them now, trying to help explain to you over the air what it is that they will be teaching these folks next week. So I'll go back to Denise, explain this next station.
Okay, the students have been, they picked a certain test to actually become an expert on. And these are tests that we actually conduct with our students when we take them out into the field. And so these students have become very knowledgeable in this area. And now they'll get the chance to prove to them how much they've learned, how important their test is on the environment. And they're just going to take just a few seconds to explain and name the test that they have, that they're going to be training the adults on next week, and a little bit about it and why it's important.
I do three. I'm Randall Johnson, and the three tests that I'm going to be doing is air temperature, conductivity, and turbidity. What I'm doing for air temperature is basically, what it is just the temperature from the air. It affects the water, how hot or cold it is. So, depending on that, it'll affect what things are in the water and how the temperature is. Turbidity, it will be counting on
water clarity.
The water clarity and how clear the water is, and conductivity will be counting on
dissolved
solids and things like that, and waste that's in the water.
My name is Brenton, and I'm doing water temperature and pH. And what I'm doing water temperature is basically just check the how much is the temperature of the water to see how hot or cold it is, and to see if what would it be and the how would it affect the fish. And pH is how much acid is in the water and how this would affect in the water too, and the fish and the living organisms that are in it. are in it.
And what's the other part of your pH? I know it does test for acidity. What's the other end of the spectrum?
For it's alkaline.
That's correct. Good job.
Now you can tell them about what this next couple are going to be doing.
Okay, the next two students are going to be talking about their macroinvertebrates collection that we do at a stream to also give a reading on the water quality.
Hello, my name is Catherine. And what we do with the macroinvertebrates is that there's three stations of macroinvertebrates. There's some are sensitive to pollution, somewhat sensitive to pollution, and tolerant. And depending on how many creatures you find from each stage, you're able to tell like if they're able to live in that water or if they're not.
Some examples of this are the water penny and the gilded snail. Those are very sensitive to pollution. And I know this because, well, I've heard it from my Miss Denise, but she has only ever found one water penny in the time that she has been working on the car and everything that she has done. And that time she found that water penny was the only time that a river or that body of water scored a good on the scale.
Some other examples of semi-sensitive to pollution would be some dragonflies and a damselfly. And for the tolerant animals would be kind of like the aquatic worm.
And a leech?
And depending on how many you find from each species, like for tolerant, they only get a point on how many like species you find. And if you get somewhat sensitive to pollution, you choose that, you'll get that number from how many species you have and you'll times it times two. And then for totally sensitive to pollution, you will times every creature times one. And depending on like how many species are fine, that is gonna give your body of water, like if it has a 4, that means it's really good water. If it has a 3, that's somewhat good. If it scores a 2, it's fair, and if it scores a 1, it's really poor.
Fantastic. What grade are y'all in?
Ninth grade.
That's freshman?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'm saying that because I want you to understand the age group that we have in here and the nature of the conversation that they're carrying on. I think it's fantastic to see this group of young people being in a position that they're sitting here carrying on a conversation about science, things that we don't hear our young people talking about. You know, normally you think they'd be somewhere with a telephone in their hand playing with one of them crazy computer games. Probably if they wasn't here, they would be. But they're here, and I'm just so proud of them being able to do what they're doing. All right, let's switch to the next group. One guy by himself. His partner didn't make it, so he's got to do it all by himself.
My name is James again from earlier, and mine is on phosphates and nitrates. And so basically, phosphates, they're a chemical, just like nitrates. They're both chemicals from certain things. And phosphates comes from fertilizer and different kinds of soaps that are bad for the environment. And nitrates come from animal waste. And both actually are made to be in the environment. And they're supposed to be in the environment, but after you get so much, it starts to become bad for the environment. So the phosphate test and the nitrate test, they're pretty much the same, but they're just a little bit different. Both of them have, you get two test tubes and you fill both up with the same water. And then you get your reagent and you put in one in the phosphate and then one in the nitrate. And then you compare their color by holding them up to this scale kind of, and then when you hold them up to the scale and they're the same color, that's how you can tell the number of phosphates or nitrates in the water. So basically phosphates and nitrates, when they get into the water, they help this stuff, you may have seen it before, called algae. And algae isn't good for the water because if it gets so big, it could cause an algae bloom. And then algae blooms, they kind of die off when it starts to get a little bit colder. And then they fall into the water and destroy all the oxygen like they were talking about earlier. And so it breaks down the oxygen and it can really harm the wildlife in the water and just destroy the flavor in the water.
Mr. Bender, would you grab a seat on that side? I'm going to have you do some rapid fire here, and each person, yeah, I want you to ask them a question, and when they move, we'll bring another one up behind him. All righty, Gay. No, you get to start first. You did a good job, by the way. We'll make sure you hear that. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I guess the biggest question I have, and I might hit as many people as I can with one of these two questions, is really why... What personal connection do you have to dealing with the environment and being interested in where we live? So we'll hit James, I guess. Come back to James.
Well, I myself, in my community, I do a lot of different stuff involving the environment. Like, in my front yard, we have a garden from where our rainwater goes. And in the summertime, we grow some really tall elfinears. And there's also a garden near us, which we try to use as low chemicals as possible because we know chemicals are bad for the environment. And so,
that's a community garden.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you know which one is that? Where is that at, more or less?
32nd Street, Ohio.
Yeah.
It's near a elementary school called Francis Willard.
Uh-huh.
And a lady named Carlene, I don't know if you guys know her, she's in the school board. She put it together, and all the neighborhood kids, they come down and help her with it, and it's pretty cool.
Okay. How about you, RJ? What's a personal connection? How come you're, what got you interested in taking care of the environment and being interested in?
An experience in Michigan. What was that? Flint, Michigan. Their water is like really bad. That made me want to do something about the environment so it can keep our environment safe, because I remember going down there helping people with the water, and we brung like a truck's load of water and stuff like that. And so that made me think, oh, well, maybe I can go back and do for, you know, our state and try to keep it clean, so, because I don't want to look back and be like, you know, Michigan.
Yeah.
After we helped them and things like that.
Right on. Well, yeah, thanks for helping them out. That's great.
Before he moves, I want you to understand again that this is our young people talking, and one person who's not here who's been very responsible for this program even put together is Laura Caldwell, and I hope she's at home. She's got caught with that flu bug, but I hope she's at home listening in, and I hope she's very proud of hearing these kids sit here and speak about this the way they are. Something happened with RJ and Brandon, and I didn't say anything about it, and I don't think I said anything to them then, but we were outside doing that trash pickup, doing that little pickup we was doing, and I kept hearing RJ telling Brandon, yeah, man, well, when you come over in our neighborhood, I'm going to introduce you to this group called ACE, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It made me think back when I was a kid. You know, you're talking about some group you're hanging out with. So I'm sitting up going, wow, I don't know what he's talking about. And then during the course of him talking, what does ACE stand for?
ACE, basically engineering.
I could not believe it. I said, and you know, we don't have the proof in the pudding, but if that wasn't proof in the pudding, I mean, I'm sitting near y'all with a guy with a hoodie up on his head. He likes walking around with a hoodie on his head. And this man is outside talking to a guy he hadn't met who also likes to wear a hoodie, Latino, black, and he's telling him, yeah, you ought to come on over in the neighborhood. I'm going to hook you up with this group. And it was an engineering group. You got to know how that made me feel, first of all, being out there with them. But it also is a sign of the time. It's a sign of what we're doing with our young people that are coming up in the future. So I'm going to make sure y'all. He didn't know I was going to do that, but I want you to make sure. All right, give me two more.
Dropping some science.
Thank you.
All right. So again, question is about what kind of personal connection do you have to the environment, or what made you interested in this? Being compelled to do some work related to the environment. So let's go with Paul first. You say.
All right. So, how this event connects me to it is the idea of just water in general, because we use it every day, no doubt. Like, we use it with washing clothes, just washing our hair, taking a shower, in a sink. So it connects to me because when I think about it, it's like water is important. So why not try to help protect that?
Can't live without it. Yeah. You're made up of it. You're full of it. Jared, you're not full of it. Tell us what's your connection? What got you interested in helping out?
My personal connection with the Friends of the Call is me and my brother and one of our friends, we were all down by the creek behind our house, and we went up the creek a while, and the water started getting rubber black. And so we went up the stream even further, and we found that some people have been dumping tires in the back of the street, and they were heating them up before they dumped it, and they put it onto fire, and so the rubber from that got into our water, and that started corrupting that stream. So whenever we saw that, we started trying to move these tires out of the way, and then a guy ran up, he came from behind his house and yelled at us for messing with his property, even though he was dirtying up the land, and we had to get out of there because we didn't want to get in trouble.
All right. So trying to be a good influence on some bad players out there. Right on. We appreciate that. Keep it up. All right, let's get a couple more people out. Thank you, Paul and Jared. And while we're waiting, my personal connection, Richard shared some stuff. I'll share mine real quick. So when I was in high school, I studied in another country. I studied in Italy for a year, and I studied art. And while I was there, I saw all these ancient artifacts that were outdoors, that were beautiful, things that had been outside for 1,000 years, 1,500 years, longer than that even. And they were historic pieces of art. And just in the past 100 years or less, they had decayed due to pollution. And that just blew my mind, that these ancient, things could get damaged so quickly from auto pollution. All right, let's hear from you, Kat.
Hello. What really got me interested in for Friends of the Call was that I would see, in the news and everything, how, people will suffer because they wouldn't have a clean water to drink, and that really gets into your head, because when you hear and see that a lot of people out there, they don't have water to drink, and then it makes you feel kind of like thankful for all that you have, but it also gets into your mind in a way to say, you can do something for them so you can help them out, and that's why I think I'm here.
I'm going to have you save yours. We're going to take a break, and when we come back in off the break, you'll be able to start with you, okay?
Okay.
All righty.
Hey, it's Junebug, and it's that time again for the Blues Kitchen Live. Gonna go down at BB's Lawnside Barbecue on March 10th on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Make sure you wear your pajamas. This is a benefit for KKFI, your community radio station. Don't forget, Bloody Marys, breakfast, and blues. We've got the Big Three with John Paul Drum, also Taylor Smith Band. It's going to be a rockin' time. It's the Blues Kitchen Live at BB's Lawnside Barbecue. That's March 10th, Saturday morning, 8 a.m. Hope to see you there. You can get more information and ticket info at kkfi.org.
If you have a car, boat, or truck you no longer need, you can donate it to KKFI, which helps your favorite radio station and gets you a tax deduction. Call Bill at 816-994-7869.
Seafaring ships, ballast water, and invasive species on this current cast. Ships use water as ballast to add weight and increase their stability. But that water can bring invasive species into the Great Lakes from elsewhere.
They're bringing in all the stuff that's in the water, so zooplankton, fish, plants, bacteria, diseases, all those sorts of things.
That's Tim Campbell with the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. He says to minimize the problem, the U.S. government now asks large seafaring ships to exchange any fresh water in their holds with saltwater mid-ocean. Most saltwater organisms cannot survive in the fresh water of the Great Lakes. So, over the past 10 years, this policy has helped reduce the number of new invasive species entering the Great Lakes. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more at currentcast.org.
All right, this is Richard. I'm back again, and I just want to throw out a give a shout out to Alicia. We just saw your comment on the Facebook, on the Eco Radio Facebook, about how you feel about what we're doing here on the show tonight. And Mike read it out to all of us. So I just want you to know that that was well received, and we really appreciate having people like you out there that are able to hear what we got going on and at the same time being able to give us some feedback so we can pass that along to these young people to let them understand that how much is really appreciated. Okay, Mike.
All right, so Brian, tell us about what got you connected with the environment.
For me, it was like, I don't really know how to word it, but something has always had me drawn to, like, first, it was like seeing how the animals were, like, not in the veterinary way, but like in the way to, I wanted to study their anatomy and like that. Mm-hmm. But then it kind of started to shift to see, like, how can we help the planet like that? Like I said, I really don't know how to word it, but it's just something that I've been interested in. Okay.
Well, by helping the planet, I guess you're making a new habitat for the living things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you're into it. You would come into my class. Brian would come in every day and help feed these little salamanders I have. He was very responsible. He'd come in every morning, take really good care of them. So I appreciate that. Yeah, we got a great generation of people looking out.
I know that's right. All right, who's my
got mission? A few more people here.
Oh, man. Is that it? Just the one? You already answered. Oh, yeah, okay. Right, well, you got right. The show, buddy.
All right, Brennan. So did you already answer this question? What got you interested in helping out the environment? All right, let's hear it.
Well, what got me interested in the Friends of the Call program was that I wanted to help my friends and my family that are in where I was born, because the water over there is, like, dirty, and people have, like, less water to drink every day because people will be throwing stuff in the water, like trash and all those stuff that might pollute it. And I wanted to make a difference in the community and try to be, like, make the water cleaner and be more safe.
Yeah. So are you thinking about maybe going back and bringing some of your knowledge there someday?
Yeah.
And where is that at?
Guatemala.
Right. This is the young man that the other young man asked, told he want to turn him on to Ace. This is the guy that he was saying that to. Very good, very good.
All right. Well, yeah, I really appreciate, Richard, I appreciate your time helping us out. And Richard, tell us what's your personal connection? I asked you what got you originally interested in helping
you
out
put
the environment.
Me on,
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Put me on my soapbox. My responsibility, the motivation for being here comes from reading the book, The Great Turning, which was written by David Corton. And in there, he makes a statement that leadership for the world to come would be coming from the people who have suffered the most injustices in life. And if you don't think that our young people in the inner city face that kind of lifestyle, then you don't know very much about the inner city. So I knew then that if someone didn't take the time to get into the environmental world, learn it from the inside out, and come back and find ways to educate our future generation, when it came time for the people from that portion of the society or the population to take their leadership role, they wouldn't exist. And I'm gonna be very honest with you. We are the only ones I know that are doing what we're sitting here with these young people right now doing. And it's just the beginning. We want you to know this is like about our sixth year. It's about 6 years of doing this water testing program, and yet we haven't found anyone that saw it, said, hey, we like what y'all doing. Let's make it happen. I mean, I'm not talking about through me. My responsibility when I do something is not me looking for a job. My responsibility is to show what can happen, what you can do. And if people sitting out there right now can't be impressed with what they see coming from these young people, then I'm telling you, this is just a handwriting on the wall. The one thing each one of these persons will be when they leave out of what we're teaching them is science ambassadors in the neighborhood. In the neighborhood. RJ talking about what happened in Flint and how he got involved in dealing with that. That means RJ's coming from an environment that was capable of doing something like that. And to be able to follow through on a program, when he was making this trip back and forth to Flint, he didn't know one day he'd be involved in a program that was dealing with water testing. And I'm telling you, if you could see them out there with their hoodies on and their little test tubes in their hand walking around acting like they know what the heck they're doing, it's a sight to behold. So that's why I got there. I consider this the summation of the thing that motivated me. What about you now, as you asked me?
Oh, I appreciate Friends of the Call for all that. Yeah, I mean, it was me. Just, you know, if something can damage an age-old artifact, I mean, something could damage us. You know, it's going to damage our lungs, too. I want to give a couple announcements of things coming up. One is the students here are going to be up at Big 11 Lake for a cleanup on March 24th. So if you all can come out, it's a Saturday, March 24th from 10 to 12. That's going to be a lot of fun, and they're going to be making a better place. We're going to take out all the old sofas and take the cups out of the trees and whatever else they find. So there's all kinds of junk in Big 11 Lake, and that's in KCK. That's on, is that Washington?
Yeah, Washington, about 11th and Washington.
11th and Washington, yeah. And March 24th from 10 to 12. And then also, coming up next week, these kids, the culmination of what they've been doing is going to be taking place at the NAACP. They're going to be doing some water testing training, teaching the community members to be volunteers to test in their own communities. That's March 6th. At 4 o'clock until 5:30, 4 till 5:30 at the NAACP, which is also in Wyandotte County.
The coordinates of that? 21 North 12th Street.
Awesome.
21 North 12th Street, behind the fire station off of Central.
All right, and again, that's March 6th at 4 o'clock. If you want to learn how to be a good water tester or get to meet these students and find out what they've been doing, and you can test some water, they're going to have some real water to test. Is that right,
yes,
Denise? So. Some water from maybe Big 11 or maybe another source in Wyandotte County to test it out.
That's right.
So. Yeah.
Well, gang, we reached that point where we're ready to check out of here. I want to thank the young people, each one of them individually. I've had them scared because I told them I was going to get them on here and ask them some question they wasn't going to be able to answer, you know, like the nomenclature of clay or something, you know, and make them have to try to figure out the mathematical equation or something. So they've been waiting for that question. In fact, one of them just said, you mean you're going to ask me another question? So I'll let you know they were worried about that happening. But this has truly been a thrill. Of all the classes that we had, Mr. Bennett and I felt like this was probably the best we've had as far as your responsiveness and your ability to understand what it is that we've been providing you. So make sure you tell your folks at home. How many of you told somebody at home to listen?
I did.
Hands
did.
Up. All right.
Give
yeah.
a shout out.
Give
tell
them a shout
them
out.
Them
hey, Mom. Hey,
yeah.
Brenda.
You got to love it. You got to love it. Mike, I'm going to turn it over to you, buddy.
This week on The Bioneers.
I think all Americans should want and most do want to see the Constitution really embody the human rights basic principles that we all believe in, and the first one is equality.
Human rights lawyer Jessica Neuwirth says the current discussion about gender inequality opens the door to finally passing an equal rights amendment on Bioneers Radio.
Friday morning at 9:30.
Rise up. Rise up. Woman song. Rise up.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Linda Wilson. I'm inviting you to listen to Woman Song every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Woman Song is music that's written and performed by women and about women.
Michael, Rigoletto and fellow hunchback Quasimodo drafted number one out of Notre Dame want to know what's on the next Arts Magazine show.
Well, Peter, how appropriate, as the Lyric Opera will join us and talk about their opera, Rigoletto.
He led the league in rushing, you know.
Then later, the Kansas City rep will be here and talk about sex with strangers.
I'm not going into my past.
And we'd all rather you didn't. That's Monday at noon, Arts Magazine show.
Join the Turkey Creek Institute for Phenomenal Awareness at the Westport Coffee House Theater at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, February 27th. Turkey Creek is a modest watershed that exists entirely within an urban environment. It can be found beside, beneath, or near Interstate 35 as it travels through Johnson and Wyandotte counties in the Kansas City, Kansas metropolitan area. The Turkey Creek sewer is profoundly responsible for the West Bottoms we know today, making it possible for a mostly dry floodplain just in time for the industrial area. It is a phenomenal constant that water flows downhill, though you may find this is no longer an observable event in the West Bottoms. Join the Turkey Creek Institute for Phenomenal Awareness as they examine the scientific discrepancy in the simulacra that it has enabled. The Native Plant Rain Gardens is having a free workshop to learn about the basics of designing a rain garden and selecting native plants that will thrive in the Midwest on March 6th at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The Kansas City Native Plant Initiative and Grow Native will host a Native Plant Rain Gardens workshop from 6 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, March 6th at the Anita B. Gorman Discovery Center. Participants will learn how to design, create, and select the best native plants for a rain garden. The MCE annual meeting, Power to the People, is March 11, 2018 from 2 to 4. Protect communities surrounding Westlake Landfill, defend water quality, and more, MCE's annual meeting. It's free for members and guests.
Debt for Dolphins brings hope for the world's oceans. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
A new water battle is brewing in California just after U.S. authorities released a report showing that nearly half of the state, all in the south, has returned to severe drought conditions.
A hearing last week before the California Water Resources Control Board about whether to make water restrictions permanent was contentious. The limits had been in place until early 2017, but were lifted by Governor Jerry Brown after last year's wet winter. The board delayed the decision for a month or so.
The winter season in the Northern Sierras has been the third driest on record for December until now, and some climate scientists are saying that the drought never ended in parts of the state.
But it appears many residents of California think there is no drought, at least if you go by water usage. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that some water districts used two and even three times as much last December as they did a year earlier.
A spokesman for the San Diego Water Authority said that they have sufficient supplies for this year, and they have not asked people to reduce usage. And he told KQED that the Water Control Board's proposal would be an unauthorized expansion of its authority.
But according to Water Board Chair Felicia Marcus, climate change is causing more frequent and longer droughts in the state.
There's some good news about the drought in Cape Town, South Africa. The day that water faucets could be turned off, dubbed Day Zero, has been pushed back again.
The new Day Zero is July 9th, thanks in part to a farmers association that released more than 2.5 billion gallons from their private reservoir into municipal storage.
Residents are also credited for pushing the date back by cutting their usage, which is now limited to about 13 gallons per person a day.
But the Washington Post reports that the residents in the city of 4 million are still considering how to deal with shortages. Strategies differ based on income. People with resources are hiring companies to drill wells and even buying truckloads of bottled water at high prices. In wealthier areas, bottled water has been sold out for days at a time.
But for people without resources, if Day Zero arrives, they will have to depend on the government and will likely face a decision whether to spend money on food or water.
A woman who lives in a settlement of small houses made of concrete and sheet metal gets water each day from a communal tap shared by about 200 people. She told the Post that if the water stops, she guesses they'll have to eat less and find ways to buy bottles of water.
Given the gravity of the situation, there is a new proposal to send up to 1 billion gallons of water to Cape Town as early as May.
The city of Sitka, Alaska, is considering a plan by a South African company to ship water on freighters, according to KCAW.
The distance between the two is more than 10,000 miles as the crow flies, but much longer through the Panama Canal.
The company would pay the going rate for Sitka's water, a penny per gallon.
The head of the South African company is predicting that Cape Town's water problems will continue for at least the next 5 years, which makes the Alaskan water deal more than a temporary fix.
Several weather abnormalities occurred last week. On Tuesday, record high temperatures were set all over the eastern U.S., with Pittsburgh's 78 beating its old record by 10 degrees.
And in the Ohio River Valley, areas were hit with heavy rain, which stressed flood protection systems. Cincinnati was preparing for its worst flooding since 1997.
Extremely warm weather also occurred in the Arctic last week. The Washington Post reports that the temperatures there have been 45 degrees above normal.
In Utqiagvik, Alaska, temps were just below the freezing mark, setting a record high. And on Sunday, the forecast for Nord Greenland was a high of 44 degrees above zero, when the average is 12 below.
Earlier in February, nearly a third of the sea ice covering the Bering Sea to the west of Alaska melted in just 8 days. Inside Climate News reports that the ice should be growing, and instead it's 60% below average.
Richard Tauman of the National Weather Service in Alaska said that as a scientist, it's really shocking to see some of this and to try to wrap his mind around both what's happening and its pace.
And finally this week, we turn to the Seychelles, the tiny island nation in the Indian Ocean, famous for its beautiful beaches, coral reefs, and rainforests, natural wonders that are being threatened by climate change and overfishing.
So it was welcome news this week to learn that the country has signed a first-of-its-kind agreement to swap its national debt for creating two huge new marine parks the size of Great Britain, something being dubbed debt for dolphins.
The tropical island has rare dolphins and then some. Among the 115 islands in the archipelago live manta rays, whales, several species of shark, along with rare turtles and seabirds. It's also home to sea cows that are the most endangered species in the Indian Ocean.
The pioneering deal was brokered by the Nature Conservancy and involved a $1 million grant from the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation.
The first reserve will be around the isolated and remote Aldebra Atoll, a UNESCO World Heritage Site said to rival the Galapagos in ecological importance. Only research and restricted tourism will be allowed.
The second park will be around the Seychelles' main islands and limit fishing and tourism.
The deal's expected to be a model for other ocean states that are already lining up to follow. If all of this happens, huge swaths of the ocean could be protected.
Rob Weary led the deal for the Nature Conservancy and told the Guardian he expects to close a debt swap deal with Grenada this year and a series of others in the Caribbean in the next couple of years. He added that despite President Trump's blocking planned swaps of U.S. debt for Palau and the Marshall Islands, he's confident debt swaps for marine conservation are going to grow.
That's it for This Week in Water. We'll see you next time. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association, bringing together the best and brightest minds in the water sector at ACE 18. Learn more at awwa.org/ACE 18.